a lot of time when advertising and strategy and marketing is conceived, the people in the room might be a little bit homogenous and also might not be the most authentic because the lived experience of those people who are being featured in the advertising or being spoken to in the advertising and marketing and comms, their lived experience hasn't been considered in the like behind the scenes creation of work. Essentially, what we do is create that safe space to have those lived experiences involved and in the room from the very start, because casting is like the last point where diversity can be incorporated, and that's often too late.
Welcome to Series 3 of Greater Than 11%, a podcast whose aim is to educate, inspire, and demystify creative careers, all the meanwhile promoting some awesome women and non-binary folk. Sean Blackman is an account director at the Diversity Standards Collective, an organisation which offers brands and agencies the opportunity to get behind the data and closer to diverse views and opinions from across the globe to drive better representation into communications. Sean completed a degree in English Literature at the University of Bristol in 2015, and not long after graduating, joined, as a junior account executive, Creative Brief, an organisation that connects brands and agencies to develop brilliant strategic creative comms. Not long after joining, she soon began to work her way up and within 5 years became their senior account manager. In 2021, she joined the Diversity Standards Collective as their senior account manager, but within a year moved into her current role as account director. She's also written a number of articles on diversity and inclusion within the advertising industry for the likes of Campaign, Creative Brief, and Shots. Sean, what a joy to welcome you to Greater Than 11%.
Oh, thanks for having me. Lovely intro.
I'm always amazed when everyone says, oh, it's a lovely intro, and it's actually all about them. It's all their amazing things they've done. So yeah, I'm wondering if we can dive straight in. I think this is such an interesting role, thinking about like within the creative industries, you hear of accounts or client services, and I think there's always a little bit of mystery shrouded around it if you're not within it, right? Yeah. So I'm wondering if you could explain what account director does and what are the responsibilities of the role.
An account director, essentially, well, what I do is I look after the clients that work with the Diversity Standards Collective. So we have a range of different brands and agencies who will work with us either, you know, sporadically on projects or on a long-term basis. And I essentially just check in with them all the time and just make sure that they're happy and getting the most out of us and are using the Diversity Standards Collective effectively to help them on their diversity journeys. So we work with a range of clients. We work with the likes of agencies like Mindshare and Lucky Generals, Pablo, Leah Burnett, and then also brands. So Danone, Amazon, TK Maxx. And yeah, so essentially just checking in with them all the time and being quite strategic about just making sure that they are working with us in the best possible way that actually helps them meet their objectives and goals in a diversity perspective.
So it sounds like a pretty chatty, involved role. What would you say the skills are needed for the job?
Yeah, I guess talking and, you know, getting under the skin of what those organisations are trying to do or trying to achieve. And so there is a lot of getting to know people a lot and sort of listening as well is really, really important. And then being able to kind of deliver against that. I also feel like I do a lot of plate spinning. So there's quite a lot of juggling at one time of, you know, different accounts, different projects going on at one time, different people that you need to kind of keep aware of things. So organization is really important. Although if you see the state of my bedroom, you wouldn't say that I'm organized at all, but organization in a work sense. And I think also, you know, I think talking is really important, but like active listening is really important as well. And being able to adapt to whatever needs kind of flex for different kind of organizations, big or small, or whatever journey they're on, especially again from a diversity perspective, it's a little bit different to potentially working in an agency or a brand in that sense.
Amazing. I also love the like messy room analogy, because there's always a work self and a home self, right? They don't always match.
At one of my old companies, we had a clean desk policy and I just could not follow it. So it spills out a little bit into work, but not so much. Don't tell my clients that.
So two things that you really talked about there is like being able to listen and then also advise. Mm. And thinking about those as skill sets, do you think they come naturally, or is that something that you've worked on and kind of grown as you've developed as the kind of account manager, now director?
I would say definitely it's a skill to hone. And once you do something again and again and again, you know, there are patterns that kind of emerge, or you might be able to advise a little bit more. What's the word I'm looking for? With experience, I guess. So it comes with experience from dealing with something maybe a little bit similar in the past. And then that means that you can then take that forward through to kind of other similar issues or tackle things in a similar way. I think it does come with experience and learning, and, you know, getting things wrong as well sometimes, you know, maybe misinterpreting something, or maybe you didn't pay attention to something that wasn't explicitly said, if that makes sense. And that just kind of, again, comes with just like doing it over and over again, and meeting so many different new people who all have different kind of personalities and needs and that sort of thing. So it is something that you adapt over time, just as, especially as the industry changes so often as well, and so many things emerge that, you know, weren't there before or weren't as much of a focus for organizations before, let's say.
Yeah, that's great. I always think that listening thing is such a interesting element, because we often think it's about doing, and sometimes it's just sitting. I know listening's doing, but yeah. So I'm really keen to know, I know I mentioned a little bit about it in the intro, but I'd love to kind of know a little bit more about what your kind of journey's been arriving to this point and working for the Diversity Standards Collective as their account director.
I've grown up in like North London my whole life. I'm the first person in my family to graduate from university. So you mentioned that I went to the University of Bristol and I studied English. I was one of about three Black people on the course, and all of the courses were all the modules, let's say, were on specific authors, I'd say. Not much in the way of diversity. So when it came to doing my dissertation, I wanted to focus in on kind of multiculturalism, that experience, how that comes through in novels and media and that sort of thing. And I remember my tutor at the time saying, "You're trying to do a lot with this dissertation. Remember that you're just analysing books. Like, it's not like a sociology degree you're doing or anything like that." So I just remember that really broadly. Yeah, then I worked at, my first job was Creative Brief, and I was there for 5.5 years. And yeah, it was brilliant. I worked, you know, started as a junior account exec and worked with the content arm, Byte, kind of proofreading and that sort of thing. And so that was really good to learn about different trends in the industry and things like that as well, for someone who had no prior advertising marketing knowledge. But then also starting as a junior account exec, I spent a lot of time talking with agencies about how to market themselves, how to put their best foot forward when it comes to like pitching and working with brands and that sort of thing. As I kind of rose up in the ranks, let's say, and had more of a active role with engaging with brands and agencies in that role at Creative Brief, because essentially they're like a matchmaker for brands and agencies, a lot more stuff came up around like diversity and how do we as brands and agencies make sure that all the creative we're doing and the comms we're making and that sort of thing are inclusive. How do we walk the walk, not just talk the talk? And, you know, I learned a lot when I was at Creative Brief. Again, I was, you know, one of the only people of color in the company, especially with all the stuff with like Black Lives Matter and George Floyd and that sort of thing that happened while I was at Creative Brief. And again, that just ramped up those discussions about how do we actually, you know, consider diversity and how do we think a bit more actively about addressing the issue and being anti-racist and that sort of thing. And I felt like it fell on me a lot to have those answers. And just at the same time, I'd been at that company for a very long time. So, and it was the only experience I'd had. So I just, you know, was kind of itching to do something a little bit different. So the founders of the Diversity Standards Collective, Richard and Neil, they used to work at a creative agency called Therapy. I was their account manager when I was at Creative Brief. They shut down Therapy and started Diversity Standards Collective. And I'd been following their journey. I was part of their collective before I worked there, you know, things like that. So I was just always really curious about what it'd be like to work with them. And I loved working with them when I was just their account manager. So during the pandemic, I reached out to Rich. I had a phone call while he was on a dog walk. And I sort of sheepishly said, "Would you ever consider hiring someone like me?" And he said, "Funny, because we're actually thinking about expanding our account management team." And then I guess the rest is history. again, it's a very, very different company to what I'm used to, because it's a startup. It's got a completely different focus to what I've been doing before. But the people I'm dealing with are usually the same. The kind of skills are really similar. And it's something I'm really, really passionate about, you know, working in diversity and also not all the time being the only person in the room who's got the knowledge of what it's like to be me or have my lived experience.
That's amazing. I have like quite a few questions. So when you were at uni and you were basically, I'm filling in a blank here, but being just taught white people's writing and probably mostly male, like, was there any, I mean, 2015 wasn't that long ago, like, was there any discussion, and I don't want to put it on you because, you know, saying there was only three of you that were black or people of color in the room, like, I'm quite shocked that was the case. And also then when you did your dissertation and they're saying, you know, like, take your foot off the pedal, like, was there any conversation, well, why you needed to do that because what your experience has been within that course?
I think it was one of those like elephant in the room things that I don't even think I was that aware of at the time. You know, I went to a school in North London that was predominantly black students, and then my sixth form was a bit of a mix. And then when I went to uni, I kind of didn't notice it specifically, or it wasn't something that was like front of mind. It's just like looking back now in the work that I do and all of the things I'm more conscious of now, I look back and I sort of think, wow, this is something that I was dealing with for a very long time and sort of had to just go through. And so to answer your question, I think, you know, the tutors never raised it. It was never like sort of brought up as, we know this is an issue, we're trying to improve it. And, you know, there was never that acknowledgement really. I did a module on post-colonialism and the tutor of that was South Asian, but that was like right at the end of my third year. And then, yeah, as I said, like when I did my dissertation, it was almost, again, an unconscious thing that obviously some part of me was itching to explore that. And who knows if I would have done like completely differently at uni if that had been the experience from the start and that had been something we'd focused on from the start. Because we did all like kind of medieval literature and we had to translate things and from like medieval English, but couldn't, you know, I don't know. But yeah, it's quite interesting. But yeah, I'm only thinking back on it now, how conscious I was about it.
It's just, I'm curious because I also lecture. So, you know, and I'm very cognizant when I'm lecturing to make sure that my perspective isn't the only perspective in the room.
Yeah,
so just curious that, like I'm saying, it's not that long ago. But what I'm really curious about is you graduated with a degree in English literature and then you moved into the advertising or media and comms industry. Like, how did that come about?
Kind of by accident. I think when you do an English literature degree, people always assume that you're going to be a teacher or you're going to work in publishing or you're going to be a writer. And for a long time, I actually did want to do publishing just because it sounded really cool and I loved books, obviously. And I also was really interested in like film and TV. My dissertation again was on like TV and books, which is again one of the reasons they said dial it back a little bit, focus on the books. And I think it got to a point where I was working like part-time at Marks and Spencer's and I was thinking, gosh, I need to get a job and I'm just going to go for any kind of sort of PA receptionist job that, you know, entry-level job that I could work my way up and just learn. And if, you know, if I do continue being a PA or whatever, that's great, but it's just, I wanted to work my way up. So I just applied to loads of jobs on like Guardian Jobs or something. And then a recruiter reached out to me and said, there's this company that feels like it really suits like all of your experience. You don't need to know anything about advertising. They'll teach you all of that. There's also stuff that has got like proofreading and, you know, potential writing in it and things like that that could really suit your skills. It's a bit of a hybrid role. Why don't you go for it? And then I thought, at this point, why not? And it just sounded really interesting. Like, I read all of the stuff that they'd written on Byte at Creative Brief and it just sounded really, really interesting. And again, that trend stuff really appealed to me. And it was in media as well. So it was closely linked to film and TV. The bits in between film and TV. So I started at this entry level role in Creative Brief and it just really, really suited me in terms of like the sort of size of the company, the culture, the ethos. The people who worked there were lovely. And yeah, I just haven't looked back really.
Oh, I love that experience because, you know, a lot of entry level jobs can be so, especially within media, can be a little tainted, you know. I think the industry is getting better, but it's so great to hear that. And I guess the last thing that I just absolutely loved, it's not a question, but it's just, I love that you remembered when you made the call to, was it Richard? And you're, yeah, like, he was walking his dog. I love that little note there. It was just like so significant.
He kept saying things like, oh, come on, love that. And I was like, he's talking to me.
That's hilarious. Well, speaking of the Diversity Standards Collective, mm-hmm, I'd love it if you could share a bit more information on kind of what you do, how it works, and kind of the impact it's having on the British advertising industry and beyond, because I know you've got more of a global reach.
Yeah, so I guess we say that we kind of connect companies with diversity. And the thinking behind that is that a lot of time when, you know, advertising and strategy and marketing is conceived, the people in the room might be a little bit homogenous. So it tends to be that a lot of advertising companies and media owners and that sort of thing are predominantly white, male / female, cisgendered, able-bodied, etc. And that just means that even if there are intentions to create work that looks diverse, it might have a, you know, a smattering of people of different ethnicities, for example, different disabilities, it can, one, come across as tokenistic because, you know, what are the reasons behind having those people in the advert, for example? And also might not be the most authentic because the lived experience of those people who are being featured in the advertising or being spoken to in the advertising and marketing and comms, they haven't actually, their lived experience hasn't been considered in the like behind the scenes creation of work. So essentially what we do is create that safe space to have those lived experiences involved and in the room from the very start, because casting is like the last point where diversity can be incorporated, and that's often too late. So we set up a way that brands, agencies, marketers, media owners can essentially just ask those questions of people who are, you know, living with disabilities or neurodiverse, are from different ethnic backgrounds, different sexual identities, for example. And we do that in mainly two different ways. So one is we call these professional councils, where we set up essentially like focus groups with people who have diverse lived experience, but also are usually from within our industry. So they might be producers, they might be media experts themselves. So they have that kind of dual knowledge of, I have my lived experience of being a Black woman, but I also have worked in advertising for, I'm not going to say how many years, but so that's a really kind of valuable expertise that can, right from like ideation, for example, if it's an advert, through to like looking at edits and things like that and PPMs and lots and lots of different areas throughout the kind of process of creating comms, just to keep feeding that in and making sure it's validated and checked at every stage, so that the ad that comes out has all these nuances of how people actually genuinely live their lives. And, you know, then audiences who see it will feel like they're seeing themselves on screen or in ads or in the comms that they're seeing. And then the other way is we have like an online survey system. We call it our collective. We essentially have people signing up who have, again, intersectional lived experience. They can actually list or tag their intersectional lived experience so that if we, for example, wanted to find out what Black lesbians think about butter, we can send out a survey and get and actually target against those different intersectionalities, which a lot of research companies aren't able to do. It just means that we get a really focused kind of response back that can really help plug into like strategic planning. It helps with like media planning, for example, as well. So it's just like adding in those experiences that are usually kind of left out and not available, let's say, to or easily available to some companies in the marketing space.
What I get really excited about what you're doing, and especially when you talked about the process of just thinking about addressing it in casting, mm-hmm, is like you're connecting such a diverse notion of lived experience and also just thinking that has opportunity for loads of creativity and ways to communicate that we can all feel more connected. And I think that's like something that the advertising industry is, you know, I feel like they're slowly catching up, but it's been something that's really, I want to say obvious, but, you know, just because of the way the system is and has been operating for so long, it's like trying to turn a tanker in a small port or something. And yeah. I get so excited when, I mean, I love how do you communicate butter with Black lesbians and where, you know, where they're going to find it. And it's just such a great way to explain it because it's so simple, but it's so, oh yeah, that's ripe for lots of discussion and creativity mm-hmm. and ways of communicating information.
That's the thing. It opens up so much more opportunity, creativity. There's so many different kind of ways it can go and things that we can do to engage people. And I always say, like, we talk about this at Christmas, for example, like Christmas advertising, if you're just focusing on like one type of family, having one type of dinner at one certain time, that leaves you a really limited pool of what you can do. But like, for example, the Christmas I have is, we tend to eat dinner at like 10 p.m. and we've got, you know, lots of different like Caribbean dishes and things, like, you know, my dad makes a macaroni pie and we have like all these different things that are involved in our Christmas dinner. And I don't think if you showed that on an advert, people are going to be like, oh, that's not my Christmas dinner. Like I literally cannot even engage with this at all. There'll be something that they can relate to, but then it's also given brands something really interesting to work with and play with that they'd never considered before. So it's exactly what you say. It opens up so much more opportunity, but doesn't exclude anyone from it. It just includes loads more different experiences that weren't before.
Yeah, I read your article on the Christmas advert, that macaroni pie. And I think you said your grandmother made, I can't remember the pudding or the cake she made. I can't.
Oh, my dad does most of the cooking. But it's
okay.
Like my grandma's recipe. It's like this like boozy fruitcake.
Yeah.
That he literally on Boxing Day will start like feeding the fruit with like all different types of Caribbean rum. And then like Christmas Eve then makes that cake with the fruit from last year. So
I definitely was like, I would love a slice of that. But also I was like, macaroni pie. I mean, I love my carbs and my starches. Mm. So that definitely appealed to me. So yeah, Christmas dinner at yours for sure. You've talked about like loads of different brands and organizations that you work with. I'd love to hear about a project that you've worked on maybe recently that you're really proud of or that like really felt like landed or, you know, really inspired you.
There's a couple. One we worked on recently was for Virgin Atlantic with Lucky Generals. I think it's great because there's like two iterations of the campaign that they've done with Virgin Atlantic that have come out now. So the first ad that came out, it was See the World Differently, and it had a real range of different people with all kinds of different intersectionalities and lived experiences and things like that. So it was really great to have a big group of people that we could bring together different consultants who could consult on this ad. So for example, we had a wheelchair user who fed back on the ad that Lucky Generals put in front of us. And, you know, from a practical perspective was like, you know, this character wouldn't wear, you know, sort of frilly clothes because that would be get caught in the wheelchair. But then also told us some really lovely stories about how he navigates through an airport and he's, you know, in total control. He's like, this is great. The floor's like lovely to like wheel on. And it just like brought this joy to the process, I guess, hearing someone's lived experience of how they actually, you know, go through an airport and how they actually engage with airlines. Similarly, we had someone who identifies as non-binary looking at the ad because Lucky Generals and Virgin Atlantic really wanted to include people of different gender expressions in the ad. And, you know, they were talking about how the ad was really positive, but then the real reality of how it sometimes traveling is a really horrible experience for someone who, you know, for example, their passport doesn't necessarily match up with gender they're presenting as. So that was really interesting to hear and to feed back to a brand who can actually make change in that space. So the ad that came out again was really, really full of joy. We had, you know, black characters in there, like a black man who was sitting in business class, and the feedback on that was, you know, we don't want him to be arrogant or unapproachable because that's a stereotype that we see a lot in adverts. We want him to feel, you know, comfortable in this and really engage with people because that is how, for example, if my dad was sitting in business class, that's exactly how he would be. So yeah, really, really proud of that ad that came out. And recently that has spurred Virgin Atlantic to relook at uniform. So it's now, you know, gender neutral uniform, regardless of your gender expression, you can wear skirts, trousers, et cetera, you can wear makeup. And they released an ad about that recently and again asked us to get our non-binary and trans consultants to look at that. And again, the feedback was so, so, so positive. And I just really like that, yes, in the comms, like there was such a change and it was so different to anything we've seen before from airlines, but also that it actually created like policy change and something that will make it really easier for people, for example, who are non-binary or, you know, women who want to wear trousers, as simple as that, to, you know, have a completely different experience and engagement with a brand. So that, I was really proud of that. And then we've also done some lovely stuff with Amazon, which I'm sure you've seen in my article, the Christmas advert that we focused on Black women living with anxiety. That felt really, really personal to me because that is, again, my lived experience and the character looks like me a little bit. So made me a little quite emotional seeing that come to fruition. And that was the first ad I think that I could send in my family group chat and say, I'm not an accountant like you thought I was. I work in advertising. Yeah, those two are ones that, like, you know, I call back to quite a lot when I, you know, want to feel proud of myself.
Lovely. I wonder, I mean, I definitely have seen the advert and it was really beautiful, especially the ending. Maybe you could describe it a little bit. So obviously people could go look at it, but maybe talk it through, like, you know, because I think there were so many really gentle moments in that drove the narrative.
So the ad focuses on a young Black woman who is living with anxiety. She essentially goes through lots of different areas of her life. For example, she's walking into like a club with her friends and you can see that, you know, her anxiety sort of flares up. And it's really interesting. There's almost like a visual reflection of the anxiety. There's almost like a flickering and everything gets quite overwhelming. But then she sort of has to power through and, you know, carry on a night out with her friends. So I think it's really realistic of how anxiety does, you know, kind of play up and play down. And it's not in a cliche way where you think, oh God, like, you know, she's debilitated. Sometimes you do just have to kind of power through or sort of push it to the side, I guess. And it also just shows a touching kind of interaction with a neighbor of hers who's also an older Black woman. And actually, funny enough, we looked quite a lot at the location of that older Black woman where she lives, and our consultants advised, you know, sort of even the pictures on this woman's wall and the artwork she would have would be, you know, really authentic if it showed a bit of, you know, her heritage and where she came from and that sort of thing. So if you re-watch the advert, look at the pictures on her wall. So yeah, there was the interaction with her neighbour, and Amazon is the ad that it's for. So the neighbour buys the young girl a gift that essentially helps them interact in a more really, really touching way, helps them kind of form this bond. And it's just really touching to see that, you know, someone's looking out for this girl, and the sentiments about, you know, I guess like being able to help out where you can, like the little things kind of matter a lot. Yeah, it's just really touching. And I think we all like cried when we saw the first edit. So yeah, definitely watch it. I think that's probably my favorite Christmas advert from like the past few years. So I shared that with my family and they all really loved it as well.
I love that. I wonder, when you were talking then, I was just thinking, I mean, obviously this will potentially extend the process of a kind of campaign or a new piece of work for a brand. For promotion, what is the general, and you're working with some big brands here, Virgin, Amazon, what is their reaction normally when you talk about this iterative research process of going back to make sure you get it right? Is it normally welcomed and, you know, encouraged, or is there sometimes, because that's where it normally comes to the crunch point, doesn't it, is when money and time comes into play?
Tends to be quite a positive reaction, because again, I think a lot of, maybe in light of recent events and things like that, you know, Black Lives Matter and all sorts, I think a lot of organizations have ambition but don't really have the confidence to do it themselves or to get it right, and also don't know the questions they're allowed to ask and all that sort of thing. So it's quite a tricky territory like to start and go into. So I think there's a little bit of relief, I guess, to have like a company like us to just create that space where you can just ask. And if you have a question where you think you've not worded it quite right and you think you might offend, like we can sort of be that filter to, you know, say it in a way that we know from experience is the best way to say it, if that makes sense. I think where sometimes there might be like a little bit of worry is where, especially in a creative sense, where there might be a worry that, you know, we're going to pick apart a creative idea and say, you know, sort of try and change creative and that sort of thing, when that's not really what we're here to do. We just want to make sure things that are authentic, they're not pushing any like negative stereotypes. They've got the nuances in that will actually make people relate to things and make it overall better creatively. It's never about this idea is good or bad, because that's not our expertise and it's not our place to say. It's literally just making sure that you know that you're validated and you're confident that you're getting it right in terms of our diversity sense. So yeah, it tends to be quite positive.
Yeah, that sounds uber positive. That's great. I love hearing that. I also think of all those brands that are slow to see this is a better way of working. And it feels like we're going to see a huge separation of those that are really embedding and living diversity in terms of ensuring that they're reaching a much broader audience than we have in the past, and those that continue on that well-worn path.
Well, companies are all on different journeys. I think I don't think it's a race, or, you know, everyone has to be at the exact same point or achieving the same things. I think, you know, different organizations will have so many different like stakeholders and objectives and priorities and that sort of thing. I think just having the intention there, and also, I guess, taking that leap of faith, I think is really important, but also being able to admit that we, you know, we're at the early stages of our journey, and that's fine because we have ambition. That's what I always say. It's, you know, don't worry about if you're a bit behind, say Amazon, for example. You know, that's to be expected for certain different organizations.
Love how positive you are, Sean. I'm definitely more critical. Right. So I'm going back to your role. If someone was interested in working in account management, client services, you know, and then also working towards leading a team, because you have, you know, progressed steadily over time and you're in this like great position now. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that any of your other positions aren't great, but, you know, you kind of got of a more kind of senior role. What would your top tips be in pursuing a kind of career in this kind of sector and department as such?
I think being able to like face challenges quite like head on. So there will be times when you've got like a million things on your plate and you've got like these looming deadlines and things like that, and just being able to have an outlook that, you know, what we can get done, we can get done, and what we can't get done, you know, we'll have a way to kind of work around that, and that's fine. Like problem solving, I think, is really, really important in this role. And I think in terms of starting out in account management, I think anyone can go into it, because it is just about relating to people. And again, that active listening is really, really important. So it's just a willingness to really engage with people and being able to help people out, as sort of cliche as that sounds. You know, I've worked in a lot of customer services jobs and that helped, to be honest. And I think also, what I find helps a lot is constantly wanting to learn and like sort of expand knowledge of, again, like trends that are happening in the industry, what different brands are doing, what agencies are doing, that sort of thing. I think just keeping on abreast and on top of that really, really helps when I'm just like talking to an agency. I'm like, have you heard about this? And, you know, that just really, really helps. So I think always wanting to expand your knowledge and always wanting to learn more and sort of absorb everything that's going on around you, I think really, really helps in terms of being that almost like fountain of knowledge for any of your clients. That really helps for me personally anyway.
That is definitely a top tip, isn't it? Like staying on top of things so that you can introduce it to clients. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You mentioned like daily challenges of workload and juggling all that. I wonder, have you faced like a big challenge in your career, and how did you overcome that?
Yeah, there's been a few. I think the main one is, and it's still something I sort of mentioned it earlier, I do live with anxiety and have, you know, had bouts of like depression and things like that. And in a role where you're constantly talking to people, you're constantly in meetings, meeting quite senior people, I had to do a lot of presentations in my last role. That like becomes like almost overshadows your role if you've got this anxiety that's just kind of always creeping on. You know, I grew up as a very, very shy person, so it's bizarre that I'm now in this role. But and I think it's actually a tip that Nikki, who you've spoken to, gave me, because I spoke to her about it and I said, you know, I just find it really hard before presentation. I literally feel sick. And she said, again, it's a bit of a cheesy tip, but it works really well. You sort of have to take yourself into a quiet corner and you have to say this out loud and you have to say, Sean, you've got this. And you have to say all these things like, you know what you're talking about, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not going to go into my mantra exactly, but just having a word with yourself and actually saying it out loud, it's like you're combating that inner voice that's telling you you're not good enough. You've got, you know, that imposter syndrome voice. You're actually saying out loud and hearing it, you know what you're doing. You got this. And sometimes I write little notes to myself saying that as well. And I've also recently in the last few months started just writing in this little notebook I've got in my room, just things I'm really proud of myself for doing. Like even if it's like going to an event on my own and networking with three people and things like that, you know, I just write it down. And if I'm having a bit of a low point, I just go back and look at it. And yeah, that really, really helps. And also sharing with other people things that I find admirable about them or things that I'm really impressed that they've done. I don't know why it feels kind of like sharing the happiness, sharing the joy. That's how I've been trying to kind of live with my anxiety in this kind of people facing role.
Oh, thank you for sharing that, because yeah, those moments are, especially presentations, I'm the same way. I get really nervous, I'd say, more than anxious. And so yeah, I love those top tips. And Nikki Kemp, what a legend. Dishing out the cheese that works. Oh, thank you. So I'm wondering, how do you fuel your creativity? So you said you like to keep up to date on trends and things like that, but you know, what else do you do, or where do you go, or what works for you? I mean, I really love that you have this kind of journal and noting things that you've done and you've achieved. I think that's such a positive thing and that helps fuel creativity. But yeah, anything else you want to share?
It's interesting. I was actually talking to my boss about this a few days ago because he was in a creative role before he ran the DSC. And when you're in a kind of startup company where you're juggling so many things and stuff, you know, the first thing to go is the gym. And then the second thing to go is like hobbies. But what I like to do when I do have a bit of kind of mental capacity is set myself a crafty project. And because I love teaching myself something new. So when I was working part time at M&S, I taught myself to sew. And I think that's my go-to creative outlet, is doing like hand embroidery. So I make hand embroidery kind of art. And I think the time when it really, really helped me and helped me feel creative and helped me feel like I was doing something is just after the George Floyd killing. And again, there was a lot of people saying, you know, I'm at a loss, what do I do, etc., etc. And I felt the same way as well. And I decided to sew like tote bags with like slogans like Black Lives Matter and the Black Lives Matter logo and things like that. And I sold them to people during the pandemic and raised money for like anti-racism charities. And I mean, by no means did I make like loads and loads of money or anything like that, but it just helped me feel like I was doing something creative, that helped me make sense of a really, really difficult, like tricky time. And yeah, it just helps my mental health massively. So yeah, that's the main thing I do. And then I keep trying to teach myself other things, like how to cook something new. And I want to learn how to make rugs as well. So yeah.
Oh, they sound beautiful. I'd love to see some pictures of the work you do. And I think there's, you know, I think you explained it really beautifully, that kind of process and working through all those things in your body with your hands, you know, and then you have something. And those things take time, right? So you're never going to mass produce them. So yeah, it's just such a beautiful thing. And I too am obsessed with rugs at the moment and desperate to do tufting rugs. So we share that.
Oh my gosh. I bought a set from Tiger the other day of like, you can make tufted coasters. So I'm going to start with that.
It's a small scale. Yeah, I love that. Well, look, we're coming to the end of our conversation. I'm just wondering if there's like anything coming up for you or anything you want to share. No pressure to, just if there's anything you want to talk about.
I think, again, in a startup, you know, things are always moving and changing. So nothing like specifically right now, but I have an ambition to go international. So watch this space for DSC, New York and Amsterdam and Europe, because I want to go international definitely in the next few years and sort of conquer that and set myself a new challenge. And yeah, I want to do a lot more writing as well. So hopefully you'll see a few more like articles and maybe one day a book from me.
Oh God, I love this. So what's coming up for you? International.
Yeah. If I put it out there, it'll happen. Yeah,
exactly. And look, you know, I loved reading your writing, so I would definitely be up for reading more articles and hopefully a book. So that's amazing. Something I ask everyone before I finish is there a career or job in the creative industries sector that you've always been curious about but don't know much about, and then potentially get someone in that role on and we could talk about their role to give more information and insight, and also someone that you would recommend, woman or non-binary, that I could also get in touch with and interview for greater than 1%.
A role that I find interesting. So I still have this kind of, I guess, itch that I need to scratch at some point in like film and TV. And I really find casting super interesting. I would love to know more about what goes into that. Like, how does one cast someone in a role for, like, you know, the next upcoming Game of Thrones or something like that? I would love to know, like, sort of behind the scenes how that happens. So that's always just something that even when I was at uni, I was always really fascinated by. And then in terms of someone I'd recommend, my friend Catherine Maskell, she is head of sales at a production company called Blink. And she's had, I guess, a little bit of a squiggly career, because she actually was the first person to interview me at Creative Brief. We worked together there. And then she's worked at agencies, she's worked in recruitment, she's done marketing, new business, all sorts of things, and now is, you know, head of sales for production. So she's smashed every one of those roles, but she's got so much experience and such a kind of windy path that I just think she'd have so many insights and like wisdom to share of like how to sort of pick yourself up and learn something new and that sort of thing. So yeah.
She sounds awesome. Definitely. I'd love it if you could put me in touch with her. Yep, I'd love definitely. To have a chat with her. And you know what? You are now episode 94 of Greater Than 1%, and I've never had a casting director. So that is such a great show. I love that. Yay. So I'm going to go off and find someone. Oh, I've so loved chatting to you. Thank you for being so honest and open and sharing all the kind of information and knowledge and personal experience. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you. You've made my first ever podcast an amazing experience. So thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. Please do subscribe to where you get your podcasts to make sure you're up to date with any new episode drops. And you can also follow us on Instagram at GreaterThan11. A huge thank you to Eden Richards, who creates all Greater Than 11%'s artwork and edits this beautiful podcast.